Mr. M. Scott, Real 2. What other types of uniform did you get, Mr. Scott?
Well, there was an issue of dues, which is really the halfway house between full mess kit, which was only used on special occasions, possibly when there was a dance or ladies present, we put on that. Blues was to make sure that everybody dressed in a similar manner and didn't come in all sorts of odds and sods of business. Greatcoats, very important. In fact, going through the whole itemized lot of clothes, the £40 really was completely out of court.
Did you have to pay for all of this?
Virtually, yes. Yes. In fact, one had to go and get a sub from one's father or something like that. And I think they were so pleased that one was in. And I personally, I was delighted to be in the battalion. It was really a great happiness to me, personally. And I've always felt it was rather the top of the brigade, you know, the 6th, 8th and 9th making up the 151 brigade. And incidentally, I believe that the 151 brigade is the only brigade with 3 battalions in it in the British Army, which is interesting.
As a young officer coming in, you yourself would require training.
Yes.
What form did that take?
Well, we had numerous tactical exercises without troops because we hadn't got any guns or anything like that. We had things like gas masks and the sort of routine things, but we used to have weekends where we'd be taken to a place somewhere in the county, and a whole scheme would be laid out, and one would have to attack certain parts of the hillside or something like that, and you would be marked by how efficiently you did it, and that sort of thing. It was all, to be truthful, a bit of pretend, really. It got everybody out at the weekends to attend these things, otherwise I wouldn't bother. And the senior subaltern in the battalion made damn well sure you were there. The colonels, were pretty strict on that sort of thing.
Who was the colonel at this time?
Well, it was a bit of a mixture, actually. Brigadier Kirk, Colonel Kirkup was officially the CO, but Colonel Leybourne, it was a matter of age there between the two of them, so it took quite a lot of the sort of responsibility. But they were both excellent and very friendly, really. There was a serious side, obviously, to the thing, but it was a very happy setup.
Did you have square training, drill training?
Oh, yes.
As officers?
Yes. We had. You mean from the point of view of the officers doing
training the officers to train the soldiers?
Not a great deal. The thing that we did have, and it was a bit of a menace, but the officers had to take out a company at a time, or platoon at a time, for exercises in about 7 o'clock in the morning, a cold morning. You know. There was a lot of sort of physical getting into shape and getting ready for going to Strensall. And we went to Whitby to camp, and that was the photograph that I'm showing you at Whitby. At that time, officers of the rank of major and above had horses. And when we were at Whitby, I, I've never done any riding or anything like that, but I was kidded on by some of the chaps who... We went for a gallop at Whitby on the moor, and my horse suddenly went like that, and I went over the top and got a bit of a break bash, you know. But it was interesting to note that I was showing the photograph that we saw earlier on of the battalion in, as it was at Whitby. And the person I was showing it to said, "Good heavens, look at these chaps in jodhpurs." Of course, it dated it tremendously. And of course, nowadays, of course, you don't get anything like that. But we had to have a battle dress, of course. And we had to have our caps, service caps. And latterly, towards when the war was growing up, issue of tin helmets. And so there was quite a lot of stuff.
Was the training still in effect based on the experience of the First World War?
Very much so, yes. In fact, I think really, being honest about it, we were going through the motions, and it took the officers to stir people up to do it, but there was no urgency. We went, for instance, when the whistle went for the Germany starting the war, when they wouldn't kowtow to us, we were sent to Aswath Aerodrome, well, airport, yeah, which is very small and insignificant, really, to guard that. Well, I think if we had a half a dozen rifles between us, we would plonk round. This wasn't anything very substantial. If anybody come in, I think they'd have...
So there was a shortage of weapons before the war?
Well, that sticks in my mind, yes, that we didn't... One thing that was the time factor. When we were actually in the headquarters, it was sort of the phony war, because we used to go for lunch at the Bull, I think it was, in Houghton, and that lasted quite a long time, and the food was excellent, and the drinks in the mess were terrific. An awful lot of time was off. The sort of thing we'd do, we'd fall a platoon or the company in and march them past Houghton Church and way down to fence houses and round back up to Houghton, and everybody would be sort of, "Oh, that's enough of that." They'd be dismissed, and then there'd be a certain amount of time would be available for other activities.
When you were marching long distances like that, was that done at infantry pace?
Yes, yes it was, and it was murder, because with anybody tall, as I was in those days, well, a lot of others, it's 164, I think it was. I forget now exactly, but very quick march, which could be quite tiring.
You mentioned the mess, Mr. Scott. How is an officer's mess organised in the Territorial Army? Is it the same as any mess anywhere?
Yes, I don't know that I can make a comparison, because I've only been in the one, but I think that officers up to the rank of captain had an allowance on their mess bill, and above that it was a bigger allowance. But the big problem was that with young chaps going in, they'd overspend a bit and that sort of thing, and there used to be a few tough words said that messes, will mess bills will be paid on the dot sort of business. But it was enthusiasm more than anything else.
Who ran the mess?
Well, the mess was generally run by somebody like a major, or something like that, who would be in charge of, we had a wonderful chap called Sergeant Cutty, who was a mess sergeant, and he was wonderful. He knew everybody's drink, he knew everybody's food, and he was one of those wonderful people.
And you dressed for all meals?
No, not really. It was sort of a bit hitty-missy that we didn't, if there's something special on, yes, but the next day I'm going to the reunion of the 11th and 8th and 11th. They're all being civilian clothes there. And to a large extent, you could very easily walk into the mess in a lounge suit, and that unless there was something on the orders for the day, that mess kit would be used.
You'd be obviously paid in some way. What was the salary or pay of a territorial army officer?
Oh, that's a corker. I don't know.
Was it some kind of a monthly thing, or was it a bounty similar to the men? Did you get an annual sum?
I think I'll have to renege on that one for the moment. I'll try and dig out some information.
But come back to the training. Was there precautions, anti-gas training? Did you go through that?
Yes, we did. We went through the tunnels they had rigged up, and you had to go through that. And also the swimming baths were used quite extensively for people with a sweater on and a pair of gym shoes and things. Towering when you get...
This was survival in water kind of thing?
Yes, yes. Yes.
What weapons were you... What weapons you had? What were you training with? What kind of weapons had you?
Well, we had Lewis gun. And we had no Bren guns. We didn't know what, well, we had a Bren gun sent over to the D Company to be stripped, and people get to know what it's all about. But there's only one came over, I think I remember rightly. And otherwise, we have Lewis guns, you know, they're a round thing. It's used in World War I. And it had a funny side. There was a serious side to this. But it was difficult to make it appear serious when the deficiencies were there.
Do you recall the organisation of the 8th Battalion prior to the war? How was it organised as a battalion? No companies and sections?
Yes. A company, a headquarters company at Jarscott. B company was Chester Street. C company was Stanley. And D company was Houghton.
Were the specialist sections? I'm thinking of carriers and things like that.
Yes. Not in their TA setup particularly. I think there's a lot of tuition on maps and things like that.
Would you say that with the war coming, you were well prepared for war? Well trained and prepared?
No. We were not. We were very badly prepared. In fact, it was a bit of a joke. And I think that green thing that I passed on gives you the basic comments of the lads. And when they got into a fight with the Germans, that sort of thing, they behaved very well. But of course, that was another story. They got chased back again. But
what signs had you in 1937-38 that war was coming?
Well, I was fortunate in a way. The manager of the mine at Horden, which is one of the biggest pits in the country, as you may well know, was a man called Earl Best, and he was very much with it, if that's the right expression, and particularly with the four article chaps who were at the pit, myself being one of them, doing these underground jobs. He went over to Danzig about 6 or 8 months before, and he came back and he said to Walter Johnson, who was a friend of mine, and the doctor, and he said, get your uniforms on, you're off, we'll be away. And he was quite sure of that, and of course he was dead right, because Danzig at that time was very touch and go. So that we were expecting something, and the fact that we were going to regular drills and that sort of thing, and sometimes a bit of hard going, because when you've been in the pit for 6 or 7 hours a shift or whatever it was, and then off to the TA, and in those days, of course, one hadn't the money to have a car or anything like that. So,
how often did you meet at the drill hall? How many evenings, or what were the periods of time that you spent there? You were obviously working during the day.
Yes. I think most probably once or twice a week we meet. I think not much more than that. And this was something special. And it generally came at the weekend when a lot of the chaps that I had in my platoon and in D Company were miners, and I knew them from being down the pit with them. And they were coming for their bounty, which is about £10. In fact, it's in there, which might be a useful comment on that. I think that in all honesty, it was a miracle that we survived. My personal view is I think we wouldn't have survived without the Americans. And I know people are rather apt to cry at them, but they were pretty good. I saw them in action at Kovitz in that particular time, and they were pretty tough characters.
As war approached, did the equipment situation improve?
I'm just trying to think. We had it did in a way, but the biggest task that we had there was digging this Gort line, this anti-tank thing. Well, of course, all our chaps being miners, they were just the right men to do it. Well, of course, there was an awful hoo-ha went on, because the Middlesex Regiment was supposed to be digging this part of this line, and then they hadn't made a particularly good job, and the Durhams went in after, and there was a bit of a... But that was in France much later.
Did you have Bren Gunn say, immediately prior to the war, breaking out in the September, had that kind of equipment started to come through? Was the carriers there and transport?
No, we had carriers in France, yes, yes.
You didn't have them certainly prior to the war starting?
Oh, no. No, we had, in fact, I had one of my duties later on was to go with the carriers, because if you put the carriers at the front, they go too quickly. If you put them at the back, they can't keep up because of the speed of the main columns, you know, the usual thing. So they were useful up to a point, but toys compared with what they're up against.
Where were you exactly when the war broke out?
I was in Edmund Street, about 100 yards from the drill hall. I was just walking up to the siren had gone, as it had for everybody. Now it's there. And so then with that, we never went back to sort of civilian life after that.
Do you recall your feelings knowing that it was no longer easy training, you might say, and you were being faced with a situation where you might be shot at?
I don't think it ever crossed my mind, or anybody else's, to be sure. What happened was that in January, early January, it was a thick snow on the ground and 40, really thick. The division moved, the 50th Division, in 15151 again, moved to Oxfordshire. And my particular battalion, at least the 151 Brigade, was housed at Sarsden House in Oxfordshire. And I was stationed at Dean, which is a little village, and Chadlington, and we were spread around the 151 Brigade, all around there. And it was really rather nice because the local people entertained us everywhere. We were invited out to dinner, and you know, it was a playing at the job, really. The biggest threat to the whole thing was the fact that it was such a cold winter that the blocks on the transport were cracking. The cylinder blocks were cracking on pieces, causing chaos, actually. And then we were moved out of there, and we got to Southampton, and we got on to the brigade headquarters. Well, this is where my particular sort of war changed completely, because and I've never known the reason why. I was involved in going on the Ulster Prince to Cherbourg, where the whole lot of us went out there. But Willie Vane, who you may have come across, you know, was staff captain at the Wine Farm. And he was sent from Oxfordshire ahead into France to sort things out. And I was sent to Oxfordshire to Charlbury, where the headquarters was. And hadn't landed there very long, because I'd been sent down as building officer with some of the battalion with one of these other chaps, Charles Burden Taylor. And so we did our billeting exercise around there, and then off to France with the brigade headquarters in that particular ship. And I think that we got to Cherbourg, and then we took a train down to Alençon, Le Mans area, that area, got down there. Now, Jackie Churchill was a brigadier. For some unknown reason, I don't know why, had me as a sort of runner, I don't know what. Well, a runner. It just happened that he had certain jobs wanted to do. Willie Vane had gone, and I was trucked out of the battalion. And so I really was spent more time with him. I was one of these motorcycle people. I don't know if you've come across. There are a number of them in different battalions. The inter-liaison between people was not done on cables or anything like that. It was done on a motorbike, and I was on one of those.
Like a liaison type of officer.
Yes, exactly. And we went to a place called Fresnes-sur-Sarthe, and which is a little village. It was quiet. I mean, the war hadn't started or anything like it. It was hardly an air raid or anything. And then we moved from Fresnes up to Amiens, Piquigny, that area.
And what was the? How did the French receive you when you went into France?
The French were very reasonable, very reasonable. They gave us I reckon, quite a lot of help. But not the Belgians. That was a different kettle of fish altogether. Instead of coming out as hard as we could go, well, we were going in.
So do you recall what kind of tasks that you were set by the brigadier, the kind of jobs you were doing?
Yes. One day he said he wanted to go down to a place called Le Holt, and it was a few miles away, and we got in the car and went down there, and I had a Humber at the disposal then, tonight by, and when we arrived he had a whole lot of chaps to meet him, you know, and he turned to me and he said, "Have you got the papers with you?" And I said, "Oh my God, I've forgotten them." And I thought he'd eat me alive, because he's a very fiery chap, but a nice man, actually. He said, "Oh, I have to go back and get them, don't we?" Which was, you know, it made its mark with me.
And yes, I was going to ask you, what was Churchill like?
Well, I thought he was super. And I had an experience with him which appealed to me tremendously. We'd been, I think at Vimy Village, we'd taken over a house in the bottom of the hill in Vimy Village. And all the breakfast and everything was laid, because everybody pushed off because things were getting in. Yeah. And how did it happen? I lost my mind. It's just lost there. I've got it. We'd been in Vimy Village, and then we had to pull out, and the whole thing was chaos, really. And he was standing with the brigade major, who was a Coldstream Guards officer, and I don't know, can't remember his name now, who turned out immaculately every day. I mean, a bit of a rough session. And he was a wonderful example. And he and Brigadier Till were standing on this hill. Are we all right? And there was all sorts of things, air bursts and things going on. Not terribly near us, but enough for me to sort of, you know. And he never turned a hair, nor did anyone. And I admired that tremendously. There was only one or two other people around on that advice. But I got involved later on with going to divisional headquarters, and which was, I think it was Colonel Herbert. I think it was Colonel Herbert. And I had to go to this meeting, and I had a China graph pencil and thing, and everybody was so tired. We'd been to Belgium. They were worn out. All the trucks were, all the wagons coming out of Belgium, the drivers were asleep at them, and the trucks going up and down on motorbikes, waking them up. In fact, there was one company meeting, which the adjutant said that the next man that goes to sleep, I'll shoot. And I mean, he didn't. Most probably wouldn't have done, but he was that near, you know. It was very edgy.
So do you recall the advance into Belgium? You'd been on the frontier for some time, hadn't you?
Yes. Well, it was very, very difficult there, because going back to the carriers, for some unknown reason, I lost my brigadier, but I was put on to going up with the carriers. And that was a slow, laborious business. And we went up to Roubaix. And there'd been a lot of bombing, and as we went through, we didn't get a lot of it, but they were blowing up all the tramcar wires, and quite a number of buildings. And the order came down on our column that the officers were to go to different houses to rest, because we'd been up to Belgium and back again sort of business. Forward at that time. So I went to a house. We were all given numbers of the houses. And the owner was packing his car up, and the mattresses on, and the family all stacked into it. And And he was off. He said, do what you like. So I went and got in a comfortable bed upstairs. I went off to sleep for an hour or two because I was pretty tired. I woke up in the morning. It was a beautiful June morning, May morning. And I wondered where the hell I was, you know, and you suddenly wake up on these occasions. But then we went on to Grammont. And for some unknown reason, there was they had the railway gates were closed. And the whole column seems to come to that point. And there again, Churchill was fairly well up in his for a brigadier. But then we saw in the distance the motorcycle units of the German army forward chaps coming through the trees and that sort of thing. So we upped and out. And this is only just a...